It's time for Sisters in Law. Janice and Davita Mathis are here to take your questions and give you advice.
Listen, doll, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Call us now at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Bernadette Stanis, you know me as Thelma of Good Times. You're listening to Sisters in Law right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. I'm Davita Mathis. I'm live here in Atlanta. And Janice Mathis, my real sister, real lawyer, with some really good advice and some real good talk, is on the line from Washington, D.C. Hey, Jan, how are you?
Hello, Davita.
Well,
how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Hey, Jan, I'm brimming over because it doesn't really pay us to miss a week, because that means we got 2 weeks worth of topics we want to talk about today. But as promised, we are going to talk about voting again today and every Saturday until the election. Every Saturday that we're on until the election, we're going to talk about voting. It is uncanny to me, and it makes me know that God is in control, that the issue of Medicaid expansion is the hot issue right now for Stacey Abrams and all across the country for Democrats, and the surprise is for Republicans. So we're going to talk about Medicaid expansion. Stacey Abrams she's a smart lady. She's hit on an issue that touches Democrats and Republicans, particularly in Georgia because of the 8 rural hospitals that Georgia has lost in the last 10 years. And Medicaid expansion would have saved those hospitals. And apparently some Republicans are willing to vote for a Democrat if it means expanding Medicaid. Well, you know what we're talking about. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act. The Republicans fought against it in 2010. They fought against it in 2014. They pledged to repeal and replace, which they couldn't do. They didn't have the votes to repeal it, and they didn't have the mind to replace it. And now the Republicans are running around talking about they support the Affordable Care Act.
I think we should quote that what you just said. They didn't have the will to, they didn't have the vote to repeal it, and didn't have the mind to replace it.
Well, it's just true. But now they're embracing it, and they have no shame whatsoever. This is what they fought against. This is what they ran against. Affordable Care Act, they call it Obamacare, so the racists would say, ooh, I don't want that Obamacare. I want some Affordable Care Act, not even realizing it's the same thing. But anyway, they fought so hard against it. And now because the American people have embraced the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, the Republicans are trying to play catch-up and support at least the pre-existing pre-existing conditions portion of the Affordable Care Act because people want it and people need it.
And the thing about it is the system is designed in a way that you can't just support pre-existing conditions because the way you pay for pre-existing conditions is with the marketplace and with predefined benefits that go with your health plan. The elements of the Affordable Care Act fit together like a puzzle. So when you start trying to unravel it, you can't do pieces of it.
Well, a Kaiser poll.
At least not easily.
A Kaiser poll from October of 2018, very recent poll, says that 75% of Georgia voters favor expanding Medicaid. 75%. And that's not just African Americans. That's Georgia voters. And apparently that's what Ms. Abrams has really picked up on. I think she always knew it because she was always talking about expanding Medicaid. But now Republicans all around the country and in Georgia are talking about expanding Medicaid when they would go down with the fight to keep it from being expanded.
Well, in states like Texas and Georgia, Beto O'Rourke has also come out in favor of Medicaid expansion. In states like Texas and Georgia, the citizens of those states are paying for Medicaid expansion without getting the benefit. Mm. They're subsidizing places like New York and Connecticut that did expand Medicaid because the federal money is there. It's being paid out to those states that chose, that opted to expand Medicaid. Yep. And rural hospitals were crying about the failure to expand Medicaid 2, 3, 4 years ago, but nobody could hear them. But Stacey and the Democrats have found an issue that cut across race and party lines. Everybody wants affordable health care. Everybody needs it. And we've got an aging population for whom it is even more important. As you, before you get to 65, what are you supposed to do? I favor Medicare for all, but the Affordable Care Step is Affordable Care Act is a good step in that direction.
Well, and there's one particular thing about those rural hospitals. Those rural residents are most likely to be white and poor and Republican. It's hard to say those three in the same sentence, white, poor, and Republican, because being Republican in that circumstance is just crazy. It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face.
It reminds me of the food stamp debate. 53% of food stamp recipients are white.
Yeah, but they don't want those food stamps.
75% of them work. Well, they want them. They just don't want anybody to know that they're getting them. And the politicians use it for race bait, as Reverend Jackson would say, to make white people feel that they're different than other people. But something like 13% of all Americans get food stamps.
Yeah, but when those rural Georgians started having to drive 20 and 30 and 40, 50 miles to get to a health care facility, it started becoming real in terms of what it meant to expand Medicaid and what it meant for rural hospitals to just close their doors because they can't afford to stay open. Well, it's not just in Georgia. It's all over the South, all over the Confederacy, and all over the country. And now Republicans are scrambling to pretend that they supported the Affordable Care Act and they will uphold it. It's just
the evidence just isn't there. Can you believe those promises?
No.
Those promises made in the heat of a campaign when how many times did they vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act? 70, 100,
yeah.
200? I lost count. They voted to repeal it so many times. So if somebody comes up now and says, oh, I support covering pre-existing conditions, you have to ask them, how are you going to do it before you believe them?
We're going to talk about that, and I hope we have time to talk about a lot of these issues. We're going to talk about the Attorney General of Georgia, who's also running for governor at the same time. Is it a conflict of interest? You don't have to guess. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about a very important issue that you're going to bring up about Black boys and race and poverty, things that we know intuitively, but now there's a big study that really supports what we've been feeling all along. I don't want to talk about it, but I will say a little bit about the Fort Valley State prostitution scandal. It's hard to say because you know I am a supporter of HBCUs, of Fort Valley State, but you know, this is what's going on. And any legal issue that you would like to discuss, please call us at 404-892-2703. You're listening to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
They are real sisters and real lawyers. Janice and DeVita Mathis are the sisters in law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Got a legal question?
Hello.
Need some advice? Call Janice and DeVita Mathis now at 404-892-2703. The sisters in law are on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Saturday nights, blueberry cigarillos, swishes make my throat hurt. Rolling up CBs on the side for me, light them up and let them both burn. Family feud, saying mom's confused, I for sure she doesn't wanna learn. But daddy's gone, say he's never home, and wishing only makes it worse. Yes,
good afternoon, Atlanta. Welcome back to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. It's Saturday night. Jan, I guess I'll get the story that I want to talk about the least out first. It's like eating your spinach first. Prostitution ring State University here in Georgia, about 30 miles south of Macon. Seven warrants have been issued. We talked about this when it first came out that Alicia Janetta Johnson, she's a former executive assistant of Fort Valley State's president and graduate advisor to the AKA chapter on campus there, is accused of pimping out college students. The accusation is that she was pimping out members of the AKA sorority. There have been several investigations, GBI, the university system has investigated, and of course, AKA has investigated, but now a warrant has been issued for her. Also, warrants have been issued for the alleged Johns of the prostitution ring, Ernest Harvey, 47. He's an assistant principal at Huntington Middle School in Houston County. Kenneth Howard of Fort Valley, he's the city manager of Hinesville. Ryan Jenkins, 35. I don't know what Ryan Jenkins does for a living. Charles Jones of Fort Valley, former attorney for Fort Valley State, and Devontae Little of Warner Robins, and Arthur James Nance, chairman of the Chris County Board of Commissioners and local pastor and mortician. Well, I found it interesting that they described everybody's occupation, well, almost everybody's occupation, because, you know, those are people that are probably respected in the community. I don't know if they did what they're alleged to have done, but the warrants have been issued and they have till Monday to turn themselves in. It's a sad story. It appears the allegation is that this lady who was the executive assistant for the president of Fort Valley State was recruiting young AKA students who were AKAs to participate in sexual acts for money. She is also accused of participating and soliciting for these sexual acts herself. And so, you know, we had Adrian Patrick on, her attorney, months ago, and he said it was all false. Well, I hope it all is. But it's a very, very serious and sad case.
Well, you know, as a prosecutor, I'm sure you had to make decisions about whether or not to prosecute a case. And you had to weigh the evidence. And so when you make that decision to prosecute, generally it's made on some substantial evidence.
Well, it's made on substantial evidence, but let's just be clear. There's substantial evidence in a whole lot of matters that don't ever come to court. And so substantial evidence is not the only basis for bringing a case, issuing warrants, and prosecuting a case. And I can't stress that enough. I can't imagine that the fact that this is a historically black college or university did not play into the decision-making process of whether or not to issue these warrants and go forward with this prosecution. I can't imagine that was not considered. And this is just DeVita talking, but I feel very strongly that if it had not been a historically black college or university, this would have been dealt with in a different manner. It's just hard to imagine that University of Georgia or University of South Carolina or Clemson University, any of your big universities would have gone through this. But, you know, the facts are yet to be brought out. These people, of course, are innocent until proven guilty. Adrian Patrick says it's just not true. At least that's what he said when we talked to him months ago. And apparently he's still saying that on behalf of his client. So I hope it's not true, but, you know, it's going forward as of right now.
Yeah, it's sad because Fort Valley has a lot of laudable attributes, and it certainly has been a benefit to that town of Fort Valley. So I certainly hope that the school is able to survive this scandal.
Yeah, and you know, in the back of my mind, not so far in the back, I'm wondering, will this prosecution lead to the schools, you know, breaking down? I hope it doesn't. As you know, I've developed a relationship with a whole lot of historically black colleges and universities, and one of them is Fort Valley State. We invite them to Greenville every year, and they always show up to our events, and they recruit students. And one of my favorite moments in these years that I've been working with the HBCUs is a little girl in January 2018 got accepted into Fort Valley State, a young lady from Greenville, and she was looking for me so I could take a picture with her with the flag from Fort Valley State, the little flag they give them when they get accepted. I just hope it won't stop all the great work or threaten all the great work that they're doing with students who couldn't, many of whom could not otherwise go to college. What Fort Valley did in South Carolina was suspend their out-of-state tuition so that students who could not afford to pay the out-of-state tuition would be able to go at the same rate that a Georgia resident would. That's extraordinary. And it means there's a real commitment and some real dollars behind getting these young people to college. And that's Fort Valley State. That's what I know. What I don't know is about these allegations. I hope they're not true, but, you know, we have to wait and see. So that's my speech.
Yeah, that's a tough story.
Yeah, it's a real tough story. And I hate it for AKA. It's a tough story for them. Their national president has, you know, requested an investigation. They've conducted an investigation as far back as April of this year. April and May of 2018. I don't know what the outcome was. I don't know what their findings were. But it's just bad for our culture. It's bad for our HBCUs. It's bad for AKA, which is the venerable sorority. We're Deltas, but we don't have any animosity toward AKAs. We want to support them. We want them to do well, just like we want Deltas to do well and Sigma Gamma Rho's and everybody else. It's just sad. It seems like an attack, and maybe I'm taking it too personally.
No, I don't think so. I think that it's unfortunate if it occurred, but it wouldn't be the first time. I know that at the University of Georgia, you mentioned University of Georgia, there have been scandals, several of them, about inappropriate relationships between faculty and students, male faculty and female students, but none of it erupted into criminal prosecution that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it just feels like they're going overboard right now. Well, we have callers, but I hear the music starting to play, and it wouldn't be fair for me to bring them in. Well, I tell you, we have something special going on. We're going to have DJ Sturgis. He is at the Halloween event right now, and we're going to see what's going on at the Halloween event, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Is that right? Halloween. Well, he's going to tell me what that means. In a few minutes, he'll come on and let us know what's going on at the Halloween event and keep us up to date on that. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380. WAOK. Legal Issues. The Sisters in Law. On News and Talk 1380. WAOK. News and Talk 1380. WAOK. The Sisters in Law are holding court. Call now with your legal questions. 404-892-2703. News and Talk 1380. WAOK.
W-A-O-K. Jan, I know this is one of your favorite albums on the face of the earth, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. You know, it's been out 20 years. We real old ladies. But it's still a good
album. It's
been
out 20 years.
I think today is its 20th anniversary. Or 20th anniversary of its release.
And you know, it's sampled so much.
It is
so many songs from that album are sampled a lot.
Well, let me say this. That album samples a lot, too. So it's okay. It's all good.
Okay.
I like it a lot, and I play them for you. Well, we have Bruce on the line from Fairborn. He wants to talk about Fort Valley.
Hey, hello. Bruce. How are you?
How are you doing?
I haven't been able to get y'all for 2 months.
Oh my goodness.
I'm glad I'm getting y'all.
Well, we're glad you got us.
Listen. Well, I hope everybody's doing well.
We're doing well.
I heard you say that you didn't want to take it personal.
Well, I think I am taking it personally.
I take it personal, and I really think we should all take it personal because I think it's an attack on all of us.
I think it is, too.
You know, I look back at how they do it. They're very quick to jump to judgment, quick to prosecute, and quick to give the largest sentences they possibly can. Now, I look back at the Atlanta teachers, and I know what they did was wrong, but what they gave them was so high and so it was just terrible what they did to them.
It seemed disproportionate to what they were convicted of doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to convict them of racketeering and all that stuff. And then when you look at this and you compare this to what the president was running his mouth about Kavanaugh, how he was destroyed and all of this stuff, he actually had charges and people coming forth. What they're doing is they could have just said a sorority was involved. They didn't have to say what the sorority was.
That's my opinion, but
one of the most powerful institutions in the country,
and our strongest. And then you have to. The other thing is this: it's black. It's female African American.
Right, our oldest.
And that's
black
their strongest. That's their strongest opponent when it comes to voting.
That's the strongest opponent
for spreading the word. I just saw this. I can't remember her name. She's the Teacher of the Year. For last year, she's running for Congress up there in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Bright, intelligent, smartest person. I can't see why how she couldn't win. But what she was saying, there are approximately 500 teachers running across the country. And a lot of them are people of color. So their biggest challenge right now is the female persons of color, not just African Americans, because unfortunately, African-American males are still somewhat slower in getting out to vote and doing the things that are being done by African-American females. So I see this as a challenge and an attack on them by bringing everything out, mentioning their names and everything, even though I don't know, of course, you're both lawyers. I don't know if any charges have been brought forward yet.
Yeah, seven. Seven warrants have been issued, and these people who they mention in the news are very prominent people, lawyer, county commissioner, that kind of people.
And see, they're quick with that, and they'll have a little tiny retraction if they're wrong in the paper somewhere that
or
nobody
nothing if they're
will
wrong.
Ever read.
Assistant
and it's always,
principal,
I'm sorry.
City manager, former attorney, vice chairman of the county board of commissioners, that group of people.
Mm-hmm. Let me just give you an incident. I went to Marshall University down in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I was there on a scholarship, basketball scholarship, 1950s. And I played basketball. My friends played football. We went to the homecoming game, and he was the only one married because he got married in college. And unfortunately, he had a baby while he was there, out of wedlock, or whatever you would call it. And I'm watching the game, and he comes off the game. This guy was all conference in. He comes off the game, and I see the sheriff standing on the thing, and I see him turn around and put his back to the sheriff. And I'm saying to myself, why is he turning his back to the sheriff? They handcuffed him in front of all of these people. His parents were there, handing him off because for child support. Now, we knew fact that there were other players, white players, who they just pulled to the side, took them in a locker room and said, you know, you could pay the money now, et cetera, et cetera. But they did this in front of everybody.
Right.
And it's somewhat indicative of the way they treat us when something. Now, we did commit the crime or whatever the crime was, but the way that they treat you after you have committed the crime or been accused of committing a crime, and that's the way it always is. I couldn't imagine them doing the same thing, for instance, to those teachers if all of those teachers were white.
No.
Because the normal thing is you lose your job.
Right.
And you have to go somewhere else and find another job. So and this is all a part of what is going on in the whole country. You see all of these accusations made, a 9-year-old child being accused of putting his hands on a woman, and I watched the whole video and it was such a silly.
Thank God for the video.
Yeah, it's crazy. And this is why I know you're going to do a voting thing later on. I just wish we could get y'all on TV or something so you could spread that word. This voting thing right now is so important, and we still hear people calling in African-Americans saying, well, I'm not enthused by by the names you've shown, and they don't move me. And I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'm like dying because I can't imagine anyone African-American not voting because they're not excited. And why we're not excited after listening to Trump for 2 years, I can't understand why we're not excited enough to vote. I don't care if they put a monkey out there because we already got one in there.
I'm so glad you made the connection between prosecution and voting.
Yes.
The teacher I believe that you're referring to is Johanna Hayes.
Yeah.
Johanna Hayes, that's right. Yes.
She's running in the 5th Congressional District of Connecticut.
Oh,
it is a solidly blue district. She is expected to win. Right now, she's running ahead in that race, and we'll just have to see if she becomes the first African-American Democrat to represent Connecticut in Congress.
Yeah,
she has the backing of the AFL-CIO, and she was named Teacher of the Year in 2016 by President Obama.
And you know what? You're singing our song when you talk about teachers across the country running for office. You know, both our parents were teachers.
Oh, wow.
And we believe in teachers. Teachers are some of the smartest people on the face of the earth because to teach somebody, you have to know something. You might not know everything, but you know something. Teachers are so dedicated because, you know, everybody talks about teachers don't make any money. Well, why do they stay? They stay because they're dedicated.
They're dedicated. And what this lady said was so important because before she got this honor, she spoke to the person who's the head of education now.
Betsy DeVos.
I didn't want to say her name. But anyway, she made the comment that we don't need all of these people making decisions for our children. We're going to make decisions all alone. And she said, I told her that if those teachers didn't make decisions for me, I don't know where I would be because I was a 17-year-old girl living in the projects with a baby at 17 years old.
Mm.
And my mother was in jail. I needed someone to make good decisions for me, and all of those teachers took care of me all the way through school. I never had to drop out. She did work two jobs while she was there, and the greatest thing she said was getting her regular degree and her master's, and then a few years later, her daughter graduated from college.
Wow.
The one that she had while she was living in the projects and pregnant at 17 years old. So she says, we need the teachers to make these decisions. We just need to make sure that we have good teachers to make those decisions.
Yeah, and what we don't need is people who don't know a thing about education trying to be in charge of education.
Oh, my God. That's part of that whole scheme. We depend, and most poor people, not to say that all of us are poor, because we're not poor. I was poor, so I know what the difference is. But we need education more than anything else we have. Education, of course, and jobs. People will argue you need this, that, or the other. But for me, education is the key to everything we have. But we had kids studied about how our Constitution runs, et cetera, we wouldn't have the problem that we are having right now. But we don't take that in class anymore.
No, I agree with you. We really need to start a movement to bring civics back to
civics
our schools.
Civics has to be in school again, because our kids just don't know. I remember going back. I know I'm talking a long time, but I'm going to hurry
and get
this up.
And the music is playing, but you're so good, I'll bring you back if you can hold on.
I'll hold on, definitely. Thank you so much.
Well, hold on. The music is playing. Okay. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law, News and Talk 1380, WAOK.
Hello, my name is Hank Stewart. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law with my girl Janice and DeVita on 1380 WAOK.
Got a legal question? The Sisters-in-Law are here to help.
I can tell you've been crying and you're needing somebody to talk to. Girl.
They're so raw and real, and they ask all the questions I want the answers to.
Call now. 404-892-2703. The Sisters-in-Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome back to Sisters-in-Law, News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We were talking to Bruce, and Bruce, we appreciate your holding on, because what you were saying kept us true to our word that we were going to talk about voting and talking about Fort Valley State and this these warrants that have been issued for the arrest of 7 people related to an alleged prostitution ring. You tied it all back into voting. And I hadn't thought about it that way, but I'm glad you did, and I'm glad you called. That's why we held you over.
You were in the middle of a sentence
when I had to cut you off, but I couldn't let you go because you really made this make sense for us.
Oh, I appreciate that. I was saying that, and you had agreed that we still need to bring civics back to school.
Oh, yes.
Which is something we foolishly let go. And I can remember during when Obama was running for president against Romney, and we were out shopping, and I told my wife we had to hurry back home because I wanted to tape something before the debate started, because I knew the kids would have the TVs all tied up watching the debate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we rushed home, and we get there, and they're watching the game. And I turned the game off, and I said, hey, you have to turn on the debates. And they said, why do you have to turn it on? I said, because your teachers assigned it. You have to watch. They said, the teachers didn't say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I said, they didn't say anything. No, they didn't say anything about it. And I remember specifically in school, we had to listen to the debates because there was nothing on TV. And you had to say who won, what did they say that made you think they won, why do you think he or she, of course they didn't have a she at that time, but they always said, why do you think he or she would make a good president? But you had to actually listen to the debates and repeat something that they said that you were impressed with. So you did know the difference, and you had to have a reason for saying why you would vote for somebody. And that kind of thing stuck with you. You learn to listen and make up your own mind and not listen to the sound bites after the debate was over, which is what a lot of people do. They wait and listen to what Fox News or MSNBC has to say about who they think won.
Yeah, Bruce, take it a step further. I remember I had to go in person. I got out of school to go see Spiro Agnew, and I had to write an essay about what he's saying, and I had to quote him 3 times in that essay. Now, you know I didn't want to hear anything Spiro Agnew had to say, but it was a lesson in civics. It was a lesson in listening and paying attention to what people say and what they mean when they say what they say. And
absolutely,
it has benefited me throughout my life. I'll never forget going to see Spiro Agnew because he was talking in code back then. And when I hear politicians and people talking in code now, saying one thing but meaning something totally different, I recognize it because I had that lesson.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I had a similar experience. This is Janice. In the eighth grade, we had to do a mock election.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And Hubert Humphrey was running against Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And I played Hubert Humphrey, and we had a campaign, and we made signs, and we had slogans, and we had speeches and debates. That stuck with me to this day.
Yeah.
The experience of a mock election. The whole school was involved in it. You remember that?
I do remember it, Jane.
At Greenville Junior High School.
I remember it well.
It helped make it personal in a way that studying in a book could not. But we were a more innocent country then. Now they don't want to teach the children because there's some elements that don't want them to know.
They don't want them to know it. And, you know, you're actually participating goes back with that Chinese proverb, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand.
Mm.
Now, when
I
you
like
did
it.
That election, you understood what it was because you actually did it, which is the same thing with listening and having to make a comment on what somebody says. You have to understand that in order to make a comment. And that's why we have people now, and you don't want to use the word deplorables and all of that, but they're so easily led.
They don't know,
and they haven't been taught. And you can't blame people for something that
for
they have
they
not been
know.
Taught.
I remember at the dinner table, Dad asked me, he would ask me frequently, well, what do you think about the Vietnam War? I said, man, I'm 7.
He didn't care. Daddy taught this like grown
He wanted you to
people.
Have an opinion. You ought
That's
to know
right.
something
That's
about
right.
Vietnam and why were we in Vietnam and what did you think about Vietnam? And I'm saying, okay, well, I guess I got to figure out something about Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, and Daddy taught civics, too.
Oh,
at
gee,
point,
my God,
said,
you, oh, wow. Yeah.
At one point, I went overseas to study for a summer, and a girl who's about 5 years younger than I am told me that her parents made her study everything about Oxford because they had read in the paper that I was on my way to Oxford. So they made her study English. She said, I was so glad when you got through being in England because then my parents would give me a break. But that's what parents have to do with their children. If the schools are not doing it, then we have to find ways to make those lessons come alive.
Yeah, we're going to have to push it.
That's a perfect segue into a lot of things. It's a perfect segue into what Janice is going to talk about in the 4 o'clock hour about our students, about race and poverty and how it shapes those who graduate in America. And a real large study that was just reported that, of course, Janice researched, and she has some information about that. And while you're on the line, Bruce, since you are singing our song today, I'll just say while you're on the line, we want everybody to get out and vote. Get out and vote on November the 6th. One of the most important races ever will determine the governor, the next governor of Georgia. You can participate in early voting or get an absentee ballot and mail it in. Make your voice heard. Get out and vote. For more information, log on to WAOK.com. Well, thank you so much, Bruce. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me, Bruce.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You know, the other thing we want to encourage people to do is to check voter status. Voter suppression is real in Georgia and across the country. Don't assume that because you've been voting all the time or you voted in 2016 or you've been a voter all your life, that you have not been put on the inactive list of voters. Go to my voter page or vote.org or any of these voting websites and make sure that you know that your status is good while you still have time to do something about it.
And remember, we've been reading, I don't want to depress people and make them think voting is so hard and so difficult and the opposition is so dirty that their vote won't count. But remember, take your driver's license to vote with you. Take your driver's license, or if you don't have a driver's license, your picture state ID. Take your voter registration card because the tricks are out. I know it's October, but trick-or-treat is going to be in November on Election Day. Republicans can't win unless they trick and cheat. So they're going to be tricking and cheating. That's their strategy, because if people knew their platform, they would say, oh, no, we don't want that. So be careful. Don't be paranoid, but take your driver's license, take your voter registration card, be prepared so you can vote. And early voting is a good thing, because they can't cheat on you as bad if you vote early.
I'm looking at the Secretary of State's website, Georgia Law, Official Code of Georgia Annotated 21-2-417, requires Georgia residents to show photo identification when voting in person. Now, if you vote at home with an absentee ballot, you don't have to show any ID. But if you go to the poll, they may ask you for your ID. So do like DeVita says, and take your ID, your passport, your gun license.
I like your... my passport. I take it every time I go vote. It makes me feel special. I really do, because they're not expecting to see a passport. I take my driver's license, my passport, my birth certificate, all of it, because they're not going to stop me from voting. And we hope that they don't stop you from voting, too. Well, in the 4 o'clock hour, Janice is going to talk to us about this great study that was done, talking about race and poverty and education. When you hear it, you'll be surprised. I've never heard it before. We want to bring you that information. You're listening to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. The opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the views of the management of Intercom Radio. Call us now at 404-892-2703. It's time for Sisters in Law. Janice and DeVita Mathis are here to take your questions and give you advice.
Listen, doll, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Call us now at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Good afternoon, Atlanta. Welcome back to Sisters in Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We have callers on the line, Jan, and we got to get them in. It's not fair to keep them holding this long. Beginning with Taylor, who wants to talk about Native Americans. Nothing to do with the topic, but okay. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, DeVita, it does have to do with the topic. Sean, I gave him the information. This is why I just like to give my topic to the hosts, you know, so it don't be misconstrued. But what I'm asking is,
Sean doesn't misconstrue topics, but yeah, go on and talk about Native Americans.
Well, I was just giving that topic the best I could, you know, the way that the gentleman took the information.
What did you want to say?
Okay, I come from a family in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, of where the mothers and daughters took care of the sick people in the community. They were mostly black Indians, and they would wind up in control of the people's land. And so today, several nurses in my family have been stealing property that they didn't have the right to, been selling property that they didn't have the right to, and now they are heading to jail. But my question to you is simply, what are you in the know of when Native American names are on property in community and in communities and has been wrongfully sold?
I don't know anything about it, Taylor.
Okay, well, I appreciate that.
You know anything
that.
About it, Jan?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. And DeVita, what I'm doing started in 1960. I have intending to put my family in jail, and I'm putting the whole family in jail for getting involved in the civil rights movement. Because it ain't all make y'all on the radio. Y'all can make it look like what you're saying represents everybody, and it doesn't. Thank you.
All right. Glad I'm not in his family. That's all I got to say. We have Aaron on the line who wants to talk about education. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you ladies doing today?
Doing just fine.
Actually, you guys, I just wanted to make a quick point. You guys were just on the line with Bruce.
Yes.
And Bruce actually was a really great, awesome caller. Just one point that just stuck to me.
Okay.
I'm actually an employee with the state of Georgia in education,
mm-hmm.
and civics is taught in Georgia.
Okay.
Each district is mandated to teach civics. The issue is that civics is taught to ninth graders, where they really don't have an appreciation or an understanding for the importance of that course as ninth graders.
I think you got a better chance of getting through to them as ninth graders.
Yeah, it all depends on their maturity level.
Yeah.
It all depends on their maturity level. And another piece is that civics is often taught, it's a history. It's in under social studies.
Right.
And under social studies, you often find that's where you'll have your coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it might not be taken as serious with them because they have other priorities.
Well, you stepping on my toes. Our daddy was a coach, but he was a history major.
And I was a coach as well.
He wasn't a physical education major.
Yes, and unfortunately.
And he liked civics.
And
you liked it too.
I loved it.
Okay. So
but that was the only point I wanted to make.
But I did was in a junior high school where the coach taught, and he didn't do much teaching.
Yeah,
he was babysitting. It was like a zoo in there.
And I had a teacher at the same school who played Johnny Cash and Ray Charles records throughout the entire hour of civics. But somewhere in there, she got something through to us about the Constitution. And that stuck with me because I was fascinated by it. And maybe
yes,
Ray Charles and Johnny Cash help. I don't know. It's better
yes,
to
ma'am.
Have it than not to have it. And it makes me feel good to hear you say that in Georgia it's taught to every ninth grade. Is that what you're saying to us?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Each school district in the state of Georgia is mandated to teach civics and government. It's just oftentimes split up and as two different separate subjects and taught to ninth graders. It's just essentially hurry up and get it over with.
Well, let me ask you something. I'm so glad to hear a man teaching in the schools. First of all, thanks for what you're doing. Thank you for your service. Like we say to the military people.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for your service. If you were the curriculum superintendent for the district, how would you change the teaching of civics and government?
That's something that would have to go through. If you talk about changing the curriculum, that has to go through the school board.
No, but what would you add?
What would you do?
What would I do? I would move it to either their junior or their senior year. Most kids are taking economics and British lit their junior and senior year, and American history their junior and senior year. I would move it up into that area where you have a more mature child that's taking it where they're closer to 18 and they can have a better appreciation of the course. When I was in school, we took government our senior year. Our teacher was a conservative republic or conservative Republican who pushed those conservative ideas on us. So therefore we were then charged and challenged to find ideas converse to his, because a lot of the things he was saying to us, we did not agree with. So
you
talk about things that you guys remember. Those are things that I remember
mm-hmm.
that caused me to want to see the other side of the coin.
Well, Aaron, let me just give you this idea. My daughter went to a school where they taught chemistry and physics and subjects that you would think were reserved for high school from the first grade through the 12th grade. They just taught it at different levels, like they teach English.
Yes, ma'am.
And reading and math. They taught civics and other things. I think we need to teach civics from the beginning to the end, like we teach English. Children come to school, most of them, the English speaking children speaking English, but they still teach it every year.
So you're thinking tier it so that each year, each grade level year, they have certain levels of it, and it increases the intensity and the depth increases each year they increase it in grade level.
Absolutely. I would love to take a class from you. I've got a feeling your class is a good one.
it's okay. I actually work for the state of Georgia Department of Ed.
Yeah, well,
so I'm not in the classroom anymore.
Think about that tier situation.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I think it's so important that children need to start learning when they're young, because those lessons stick with us. I still remember the Kennedy-Nixon debates.
Wow.
I do, too.
Because our grandmother had us sitting in front of the TV watching it.
And I found out later it was my birthday. I couldn't remember why she made a cake. But we watched the debate and she made a cake at the same time.
We remember the cake, but we didn't remember the birthday. And we remember the debate. And we were too little to really be watching the debate, but that's what they did in our house.
The debate.
Right.
Yes, and I think that's what parents need to realize. Whatever they're doing or not doing in the classroom, let your child know that it's important to you that they learn these things, and you'd be surprised the children want to please you whether they act like it or not.
Yes, they do. They do.
Yeah, Aaron, you might be closer to developing this curriculum than you know.
I'm listening to y'all, and I'm receiving that.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate
you. Thank you, ladies, for taking my call.
Thanks for
listening. Have a great day.
And Richard, Todd, and everyone else who calls, we're going to get to your calls. And Janice is going to talk about that study we've been teasing since the beginning of the show about Black children, race, and poverty in education. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
My two favorite ladies in the world, because your head has been ordained with the wisdom of God. And if no other man acknowledges that, I want you to know that Lucas acknowledges it.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. The sisters-in-law are holding court. Call now with your legal questions. 404-892-2703. News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Talk 1380 WAOK. Janice, you have shared this very intriguing story with me. Race, not just poverty, shapes who graduates in America.
Well, yes, that's true.
So what does that mean?
Well, it means that racism persists, bottom line is what it means. It means that all this talk about race neutral and being past race is really not supported by the most recent, most comprehensive data, that race neutral is not sufficient to overcome racial disparities. Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote in one of her opinions, to get beyond race, we have to take race into account. So we need race-conscious policies that specifically target Black boys. Let me just give you a little synopsis. This study is by the Equality of Opportunity Project. It's relatively new. There's been a lot in the press about it, but not so much in the mainstream, you know, CNN, MSNBC. No matter how much money a family has, no matter how wealthy a Black family is, Black men are less likely to finish high school, less likely to go to college, more likely to go to prison, more likely to experience poverty, less able to earn wages, less likely to be employed. This study was done on millions of people, 26 years worth of data from, I think, 1989 all the way to 2015. Racism and policies that don't take race into account are the reasons. Interestingly enough, Black boys do best when they live in neighborhoods where there are low levels of white racism. Mm. Surprise. That it is not anything about the family, the income, the education. Black boys thrive when whites are not racist. Duh.
Or when whites are not around.
Well, when they live in upwardly mobile neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are low levels, whites are around, but they're not racist whites.
Okay.
Danae said something to me when she was just a little girl. We were in a meeting, a Rainbow Push meeting, and they were talking about all the disparities and discrepancies and Black achievement. She said, when are we going to start studying them?
That's a good question.
Us thinking that the problem is in us, when the problem really seems to be based on this study, that racism is what causes black men to suffer economically and educationally.
You know, when you were saying those things, introducing us to this topic or this study, I was thinking a racist would say that black boys do worse because they're genetically inferior.
Right. But that is not borne out by the... They looked at what your test scores are in the lower grade and how you end up, and there's no correlation between lower test scores and income-earning ability later in life. What matters is whether you were exposed to racism or not.
Mm.
Yeah. That's deep. And
one thing
we
that
sort of felt that,
yeah.
But to have a big study, I mean, with millions of data points in it.
And, you know, black people have a whole lot of sayings that really encapsulate what you just said, like, you got to stay black till you die. The point is that whether you're rich or poor, educated or uneducated, you're going to be black and you're going to be discriminated against.
Black boys who grow up in millionaire households are more likely to be poor at some point during their lives than white boys whose families only earn $36,000 a year.
Shocking. And I tried to think, when I read that, I tried to think of some black boys who grew up in millionaire homes, in the top 1% homes. And I just, it's hard to wrap my mind around that concept. Not that they would be raised by millionaires.
I know quite a few well-to-do families whose boys are suffering right now.
That's what
I could name some.
That's why I couldn't wrap my mind around.
Don't you know black boys who are underachieving, black men who have underachieved their parents?
Yes.
Who maybe didn't finish college or ended up getting in some kind of criminal trouble.
Well.
And they say, look, we give money. The other thing is this past race. With President Obama's election, there's a lot of talk about post-racial America.
Yeah.
We give Title I money based on family income. We do not give Title I money to schools where there are high concentrations of black students, because black students need help overcoming racism. They don't just need help overcoming poverty. They do okay. And interestingly enough, the discrepancy, the disparity is not nearly as pronounced among girls as it is among boys. And why is that? We live in a male-dominated society. The people who have the most power are still white men. They exercise that power against black men more ferociously than they do against black women. Black women are not perceived as threatening or as competition.
And black women are the most highly educated segment of our society.
And there is, believe it or not, between black women and white women with similar family incomes, there is no difference in earning ability. Black girls and white girls from similar economic backgrounds have the same earning ability over their lifetime.
So metaphorically, kill all the boys works. It's just like Pharaoh and Herod.
Right. And we as black women have to own that and fight for policies that counteract that. I hear people talking about, I didn't go to school on affirmative action. Well, you're a fool. You know, you're just being foolish. Because why would you, I assume I went to school under affirmative action, but I also assume that I took my affirmative action tip and did the very best I could with it.
Right.
I don't know whether I did or not. You worked with a lawyer who did affirmative action, didn't you?
Yeah, in law school. She hired me to work for her just because her opinion was totally opposite from mine.
Mm-hmm.
She defended institutions that were accused of racism. And she knew that my point of view was totally opposite of hers. And that's the only job I ever got that I didn't ever apply for. She came to me and asked me to work for her.
She wanted a sounding board. She wanted a different opinion.
I don't know what she wanted. I hope she got it. I was in her, they had a person who was against affirmative action teaching voting rights. I was in her voting rights class, And somewhere along the line, I don't know, she figured out I was the person that she needed to hire to be her researcher and assistant. And I think it's now, because our opinions were opposite.
But this idea that we don't deserve any special help, that's a form of reparations, actually. Affirmative action is a form of reparations, and not just repair for damage done in the past, but repair for the continuing damage of continuing racism in this society. And so we have to be careful when we say we don't believe in affirmative action. We ought to. We ought to believe in more of it rather than less. But it's an interesting study. If people go to the Facebook page for WAOK, I posted some articles there, and I posted some on my own Facebook page. And I'm going to share them with the NCNW Facebook page, too, when I get a minute. But read through it for yourself and tell me what you think.
Well, Jan, I remember one of the first interactions I had as a solicitor, a prosecutor, after I got out of law school. This white lawyer called me in his office, and he said, well, don't you think we prosecute so many black people not because they're black but because they're poor? And I said, no, I think you prosecute them because they're black, because the system is racist, and many of the prosecutors are racist. He said, no, it's just poverty, and I bet if we checked on their income level, we would realize it was poverty and not racism.
Well, this study says no, that's not true.
Says just the opposite. But didn't we know it? But I'm glad we got some data to support what we've been feeling.
We knew it in our heart.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. We have callers on the line. We will get to you.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. The sisters-in-law are holding court. Call now with your legal questions. 404-892-2703. News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
WAOK. I am so glad that DJ Sturgis told me about Owloween, Kennesaw State. They're the Owls. It makes sense now. Sounds like fun. I would like to watch him ride in a hot air balloon. I don't think I would want to get in one, but that's just where I am in life, and I want to keep it like that. But sounds like a lot of fun. Todd is on the line. He wants to talk about Fort Valley and the AKA situation. Hey, Todd, how are you?
Hey, Davida, hey, Janice. I've only read the Washington Post article that was put out on May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some updated information that somebody could just read through?
Yeah, seven, AJC is reporting that seven warrants were issued yesterday. And well, I said they had till Monday to turn themselves in. They have till Tuesday to turn themselves in. And it was kind of vague on what the charges were, but one of the charges against the young lady whose attorney we had on back in May, I think, Adrian Patrick. One of the charges was pimping. I don't know if that's a real charge in Georgia or not, but that's what was in the newspaper.
The May 1st article doesn't reveal any actual evidence of it. There's some complaints.
They don't reveal any evidence now either, and the reason for that, as reported by GBI and by the prosecutor, was that the investigation is ongoing.
Well, that's understandable. That's understandable. But I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it seems to me that they would have had to have somebody roll on them, like one of the 21 AKA women that became AKAs, or one of the guys that are now have warrants out for them. Because Johnson is saying that she's not guilty. Johnson's attorney, rather. Is it Johnson or Johnson's attorney's last name?
Adrian Patrick is the attorney.
Okay, Patrick is saying that Johnson is, they don't have anything on her. So I'm like, there must be something for them to get some warrants.
They said that they had a legal basis for getting a warrant, and you know they have to go before a judge to get a warrant and prove probable cause. That doesn't mean it's true, but it means that there is some evidence.
Reason to look into it. Okay, racism is a contributor to black men's, black boys and black men's success. I question how much of it should be weighted on them coming out of an affluent neighborhood versus what the quality of the upbringing is by the family, as to how well they move through it. Do you follow me?
I think I do.
I hear the two of you keep referencing. Wealthy family.
This is what I'm hearing, Todd. You tell me whether if I'm on the right track with you. There are people who are raised in affluent families who are not taught any values, like the influenza child in Texas who was found not guilty for killing four people because he had never been taught wrong from right. Are you thinking along those lines?
Similar to that.
Okay.
Similar to that. If having a lot of money, and growing up in a neighborhood where there are a lot of people that have a lot of money isn't really an indicator of what the quality of your upbringing is by the family. The values, as you mentioned, count for a lot. And not only the values, but learn how to protect yourself from things that work against your well-being, such as racism. So I'd be more inclined to see stats on black boys that grew up in middle-class neighborhoods where there's not a heavy influence of racism and have had quality upbringing versus those that grew up in middle-class neighborhoods that are limited to having to deal with racism, but they have a lot of money. I don't think the money is the protection factor. It's the factor of protection. I mean,
I agree with you on that. Money is not the protector.
It's the quality of the upbringing.
And I think money is not the protector because racism exists. And that's what I think.
And oftentimes, dudes that I know a lot of black dudes, and I know a lot of black dudes that grew up in middle-class neighborhoods like me. Oftentimes, those that fall victim to the pressures of racism and the tripping up techniques of racism, they fall victim to a whole lot of things that trip them up in life because their upbringing wasn't that good. They just grew up in a middle-class black neighborhood.
And see, this is where we differ. I think that racism trips us up.
It does.
I think that racism works against us.
I think
it's effective and it's persistent. And it's not viewed as a factor among people who, like, you know, they fund the education for poor people, but they don't fund any programs to help us deal with racism.
And then I had a question. Last week or the week before, Janice asked me what I felt about, where was I about affirmative action. I said I support it to a strong degree. I think it needs to be tweaked. Where are the two of you at with affirmative action as it applies to benefiting white women in today's society?
Well, I think that we should use the same standard of review. There is a standard in the law called strict scrutiny. In order to establish a race-conscious program, the program has to survive strict scrutiny when it comes to race. When it comes to gender, they don't apply strict scrutiny. So you've got an entirely different method of review and evaluation for whether a gender program is appropriate as opposed to a race program. Being both black and female, I would submit that there ought to be one standard for both.
I want to ask you some more about that, but I'm being conscious of the time. I'm going to let that one go past. Expect me to come back to that again, because that's one of the things that I question that I think needs to be tweaked about affirmative action. They need to reevaluate how it applies to white women. So I'm not against white women getting it, but I think it needs to be reevaluated.
And it ought to be one set of rules.
Maybe. I'll talk with you about it later.
I think white women have enough advantage. I don't think they need the extra advantage of not having programs that are designed to benefit them, not to be scrutinized, like programs that are designed to fit or help African Americans are scrutinized. You know, that's what Janice is talking about. It's two different levels. They're going to go through with a fine-tooth comb and a magnifying glass and a nitpicker regarding programs that are designed to benefit African Americans. But if it's designed to benefit white females, the scrutiny is not as great. They say, oh, that's nice. But the standard should be the same. But just meditate on that. I think you'll see the fairness of the standard being the same for both groups.
What I've seen is that, and I don't have an opinion on whether this is right or wrong. But what I've seen is that white women over at least the last 30 years have been the greatest benefactors of affirmative action.
And that's probably because the standard is easier for them.
It's lower. There was a case when I was in law school called Bakke.
Yeah.
And Bakke established strict scrutiny for race-based programs, but it did not apply strict scrutiny to gender-based programs like Title IX. And that's a mistake in the law. It's wrong.
Okay.
And it makes it easier
for governor. I'll talk to y'all later.
Thank you so much, Todd. We appreciate it. And since Todd brought back the issue of voting, and we promised to talk about it every time we're on the air until the election, and we'll probably talk about it even after. You know, it's wrong for the Secretary of State to be the Secretary of State and control elections and also participate in elections. There's a lot
of candidate.
As a candidate, there's a lot of talk going around talking about he's not able to perform his job because he's only been in the office four or five times since the election started. That's not my problem with it. My problem is he's over something that he is participating in as a candidate, and it's a conflict of interest. It's
and
a gaping
conflict
of interest.
And he's using the power of his office to benefit himself.
Yeah, and one of those ways where he's done it consistently ever since, I guess, the thought of running for governor ran through his mind. You know, we talked about how so many Georgians were removed from the voting rolls. It was not necessary except that the Secretary of State was going to run for governor, and those people who were removed from the rolls were likely to vote for a Democratic candidate and not likely to vote for him. So he set the stage to win.
53,000 voter registration applications are on hold right now. 70% of them are African Americans.
Well,
that can't be fair.
It's not fair. And take a step back to the 600,000 or more who were purged from the rolls. He was the Secretary of State when that was done.
That's true.
And it could only have been done to benefit him as a candidate. That's why it's not. That's why it's a conflict of interest. As a candidate,
and to
he
benefit
wants,
his party.
Right. As a candidate, he wants to benefit his party and benefit himself. As the Secretary of State, he should want everyone who's eligible to vote to vote. And those two are in conflict. Yeah, he needs
and
to
And that's why
sit
he's
down.
Being sued again.
Yeah, but the election is, what, 17 days away?
And if we had the Voting Rights Act in place as it existed before Shelby, we could stop the election or stop the practices.
Yeah, but he'll be in office now before they stop it. But we can outvote him. You can outvote
right.
him. And that's what we hope that you do. Well, Sister Aye, Iristine, Jahan, and anyone else who calls, we will get to your call after the break. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Hi, this is Pamela, the Shoe Lady Reynolds of Exclusively You Shoe Design. When I need legal advice, I turn to the Sisters-in-Law attorneys, Janice and Davita Mathis, on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Got a legal question? The Sisters-in-Law are here to help.
I can tell you've been crying and you're needing somebody to talk to. Girl.
They're so raw and real, and they ask all the questions I want the answers to.
Call now. Call now. Call now. 404-892-2703. The Sisters-in-Law on News and Talk 1380. WAOK.
Little ghetto boy playing in the ghetto street. What you gonna do when you grow up and have to face responsibility? Will you spend your days and nights in a pool room? Will you sell cats of madness to the neighborhood, little ghetto boy? You already know.
Good afternoon, Atlanta. Welcome back to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Sister Aye is on the line. I've been waiting to talk to her because she's going to talk about something a little different, I think. Hey, Sister Aye, how are you?
Hey, I feel good about it. Greetings to you good sisters that's unfortunately in league with Addicted to White, a shame-based alliance by Dr. Jerome Fox. It's a must-read. It's wonderful to read.
Sister DeVita and Sister Janice, I have two questions for you, one for each of you. But I also have a community comment regarding from Dr. Carter G. Wilson.
Okay.
And he said in his book, The Miseducation of the Negro, he said the so-called most educated among us are the last to help advance the psychological liberation of the Negro. Now, he said that. And I think he should be challenged today to reverse that, because you all just got too much whip and quip about you not to. Because right now it stands as he said it is. His prediction has not been proven wrong. Now, Sister DeVita, this is my question to you and Sister Janice. Sister Janice, you there? Janice.
I think she is. What's your question?
Thank you. But now my question to you, Sister DeVita, is...
I'm here.
Thank you, darling. Regarding, are you receiving my emails that I'm sending you on a YouTube video, 11 Lessons of White Supremacy, quote-unquote, also racism, under European domination by Dr. Umar Johnson? Sister DeVita, are you receiving them?
No, I didn't get them. You know, I will watch them. I love YouTube.
Well, okay, you got to give me another email.
So I'll give it to you right now. D. Mathis, attorney. @gmail.com.
D. Mathis, T-H-I-S.
Attorney.
H-T-T-O-R-N-E-Y.
@gmail.com.
And thank you. I'm going to send it to you.
Okay.
But now, listen, this is not up to you. And to DeVita, I mean, Mrs. Janice, I did have a critical question for you. But listen, DeVita, now I have to go, I'm not feeling good here, getting better and everything. I go buy some dog on Popeyes. Mashed potatoes and gravy. And without them disclosing it, they give me a belly full of gravy with pork in it. So my question, are you available to help me see any, I don't know the word, really, that, you know, it's nothing else. It should be in the black pork is in the gravy. Why, I wouldn't expect no pork in the gravy. Anyway, I called people and said, I'm sorry, ma'am. But, you know, I think that's wrong, this service. I ordered gravy. I didn't order the doggone pork and then to the DeVita. To you, I want to know if you would share with me now this is what it is. This is the leader. Mm-hmm. I want to know, please tell me, in all sincerity, why should Negro, and I say that lovingly and affectionately, mm-hmm. regarding voting, blindly continue to do plantation politics, regarding modern day economic pittance pay legislation, pittance pay grants, okay, corporate sharecropping, and without supporting redefining self-evaluation of self-worth and God-given sovereignty to demand what Dr. King gave us in his book, Where Do We Go From Here? Community Are Chaos, he said, the promised land reservation with 25 years no taxation and a spiritual liberation. He says, am I communicating with your heart from mine?
Well, I hear the words that you're saying, but I'm not sure I understand them. Let me see. You tell me whether or not this is accurate. Are you saying that we should not participate in the democratic voting system in the United States?
I'm telling you that based on the democratic coma, the coma that black folks suffer from under this democratic system, it's a tool of European domination based on the constitutional conspiracy of you blindly voting, but nowhere in it does it say black folks will get equal liberal economic compensation. So no matter who you vote for, and that's another thing that Mr. DeVita is just applying for to be the governor. Sisters, how could we, in all good sense, vote for her and turn our backs on Queen, what her name, McKinney? Because she refused to support foreign relations, and she refused to give the Jews what we don't have yet, reparations. How can we do that? These people are tearing us down to what they are.
Let me try to answer you, Sister Ayan. I live in the United States. I live in the state of South Carolina. I work in the state of South Carolina. I work in the state of Georgia. I am a citizen of these places. I have to obey the laws that prevail in these places. I have to be subject to taxes and subject to rules and regulations based on the fact that I'm a citizen and I live in South Carolina and work in Georgia and South Carolina. And in as much as I am a citizen, and let me just take it back a step further. I predate the United States of America. My people came here under force before this country was a country. We built it for free because our labor was valuable. If it were not valuable, there would not be a country now. But let me finish. I listened to that gibberish you were talking, so listen to me.
Yes, ma'am.
We came here not of our own accord, but we built this country. Before it was a country, we built it. And after it was a country, it rightfully belonged to us, and it still rightfully belongs to us. And I will go to my grave before I change my mind about having a voice in the governing of a country that my ancestors built, that I live in, that I work in, and where my family lives. And so there is no alternative to having some voice in how this system is governed other than voting, because we do not have that society where we are in charge and those people who kidnapped us and brought us over here are not. And so until that grand and great and remote day comes, I'm going to participate in this system. Now, I'm not against black people. I'm for black people. I'm for myself and I'm for my family and my community. But I'm not going to sit on the sidelines until that day comes, that magical, mystical day comes when black people are in control. I'm going to control what I can control now because, you know, the Lord might take me home before that day that you're waiting on. Okay, I'm finished now.
Okay, in closing, you see what Dr. Carter G. Russell said? He made a bet. He said, no, the Negro, with the most education of the devil's world, will be the least to help us towards psychological liberation.
Well, I'm going to help myself all I can, and you help all you can. But I just don't see anything you're doing, Sister Aya. I'm saying in love. You tell us not to participate in the system.
Alliance with Dr. King to read his book. We're going the wrong way. The man gave his life, his legacy, his life.
And nowhere in that book did he tell us not to vote.
He gave you a specific instruction.
Nowhere in Dr. King's books did he ever tell us not to vote. So don't spread that lie. Ooh, I love you, Sister Aya, but yeah. Thank you, Sean. it's not fair to bring Iristine in now, but we got a couple of minutes. Maybe she can make some sense out of this. Hey, Miss Iristine, how are you doing?
Hey, Miss DeVita and Janice. How you guys doing?
Hey, Miss Iristine.
Good to hear your voices.
Tell me something good.
Girl, I'm so upset right now. I'm livid about this Secretary of State in the
first
place.
Isn't that something?
In the first place, I thought there was something written in the charter where they have to resign their present position.
No, they don't have to. They should, but they don't have to.
Okay. And on the 70% blacks out of that 53,000,
mm-hmm.
Lord have mercy. But our young people better wake up.
Don't forget about the 600,000 that were purged.
That's what I'm talking. Now, that was in 2016,
right?
Wasn't it?
Uh-huh. And that was not an accident. That was a Republican
that was
plot. That's the trick or treat. It ain't no treat. It's a trick or cheat.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is, well, let me give you a little. I wrote something on Facebook this morning because I've just been really upset.
Well, in they're playing the music now, Miss Iristine. Please hold that thought. I know you've been holding, but hold it, because we will bring you back. We want to hear what you have to say.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine.
Well, thank you so much. Miss Iristine is going to hold, and I hope that Mev and Jihad will hold. And if you call, we will get you in. We promise. You're listening to Sisters in Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Legal issues. The Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.